Hello again, Gooners! Hope you can hear me out there in podcast land. This is the Loose Cannon with a little cough. Yeah, I'm still the Loose Cannon, even with or without a cough. But what have I got for you today? Got quite a lot. I've got the physical coming up later. You'll pass the physical, don't worry. I'm not sure if Fizzy will pass the physical, but I think he does, actually. I think you'll agree. And news on a possible signing from Spurs. Well, makes me laugh, that one, but I will tell you a bit about that later. The latest on Houssem Ouar, I believe I'm saying it correctly. Sounds a bit like a Wurzel to me, Ouar-Ouar-A, but that's another story. And Nicolas Pepe's come a long way. So those three stories I'm going to cover first, and then I'm going to move swiftly on and let Fizzy call, or Fizzy and his call take centre stage. All right, so first up, what did I promise to talk to you about? Well, the first thing I promised to talk about, I didn't say what order I was going to do it in, but here we go. The order I'm going to do it in is this. A Daily Express has run a very interesting story written by Stuart Ballard, in which the headline is Arsenal tipped to make £50 million bid for Dele Alli with Tottenham future unclear. It's quite a long headline. Works for me though, made me click on it. Arsenal, the way it starts though, this article does amuse me. Arsenal are reportedly in the market for a midfielder this summer. And that's interesting. And then that's about, that's a tenuous link to what Ray Parlour has come out and said. Ray Parlour wants to see his former club make an offer to sign Dele Alli from rivals Tottenham. The Gunners are looking to do more business in the transfer window before the October 5th deadline. So there's not a lot to that story, really, other than Ray Parlour thinks. And I have to say, for 50 million, I'm not sure he's worth the money, but a lot of Arsenal fans, I think, would be pleased if Dele Alli joined. The chances of that happening is close to zero. It's very hard to imagine Spurs letting Dele Alli go, even if he is out of favour. The only thing is, I think a defensive midfielder is more of a priority for Arsenal, and Dele Alli doesn't fit the bill in that sense, but he does score a lot of goals. You would expect him to at least get double figures should he sign for Arsenal, and as I said, the chances of it are so remote, it's hardly worth commenting on. But anyway, the Express have run this story. Don't blame me, don't shoot the messenger. So anyway, just continuing their story in the Express, a midfielder is seemingly their priority, with both Thomas Partey and Houssem Ouar, who I'll talk about in a bit, the top targets. Both midfielders offer something different, with Partey providing cover in front of the defence, while Ouar is more attack-minded. The Atletico Madrid midfielder would come slightly cheaper due to his £45 million release clause. I don't know where this figure of 50 million for Dele Alli has come from, but as I've already said, I personally would sign him, but not for that amount of money. That's just a bit too inflated, especially given it's a post-COVID market. Anyway, Parlour believes that Arsenal are more in need of someone capable of joining the attack. So that's where I differ with Ray Parlour. Obviously, Ouar is going to cost a fair bit. Chelsea's Jorginho has also emerged as a possible target, but Parlour has this other player in mind. He admits there would be uproar if Spurs let him go. Paraphrasing a bit here. But here's his quotation. This is what he said, Ray Parlour, Arsenal legend on TalkSport. I think he'll be more of a fit than Jorginho. I've always said they're lacking goals from midfield. I don't think Spurs would sell Dele Alli to Arsenal. There'd be uproar in the Spurs fans if that happened, but he would be a good fit for Arsenal. He added, I certainly believe he's got a lot of good years left in him as a player, so £50 million has got to be the marker. They're lacking goals from central midfield areas, so he could tick that box. And he does score goals, and he can get you 10 from midfield if he plays on a regular basis. So yeah, hard to argue with a lot of what Ray Parlour says there. A player mentioned in that article was Houssem Ouar. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I'm giving it a good go, so give me some credit. Anyway, the headline in the Daily Star is Houssem Ouar makes Arsenal transfer decision after Leon Chief speaks out. And here goes the story. Ouar is one of Arsenal's top summer transfer targets, yes we know, and the Leon midfielder is said to be keen on the move. I wouldn't be surprised if he is, but is he going to get the move? That's another story. Lyon star Hussein Mouar is ready to join Arsenal, despite suggestions from Lyon's president Jean-Michel Aulas that the player could stay. Aulas is one of our top targets, of course, so I'm paraphrasing a bit now, along with Partey, who I've already mentioned. Italian transfer expert Fabrizio Romano is reporting that Aulas does want to join Arsenal. He spoke on the Here We Go podcast. Romano said this: obviously, the club that is working to sign Aulas is Arsenal. We have to say that Arsenal are convinced that if they could sell some players, and they have many in Kolasinac, Socrates, Torreira, many players to sell or loan out, then they can try again for Aulas. Lyon are asking for €60 million, £55 million, so it's complicated, but the player would be ready to join the Premier League and would be ready to join Arsenal. The player would like to come to the Premier League and to join Arsenal, but for now there are no negotiations. So it doesn't sound too promising, does it? Anyway, continuing with what he said. In July, they offered Guendouzi as part of the deal and they didn't find an agreement. So he said also, now, I've lost it now. Now, it's up to Arsenal if they sell players. I'm convinced they will make another offer. Well, he also added, financially, Arsenal are like everyone else in a tricky spot. And Hussein could say to himself, the best thing would be to stay with us. Well, if he's in doubt, I think he will move on. And Arteta's also said that regarding transfer plans, it really, he's more or less saying it depends. You know, to cut a long story boring, as they say. Right, and finally, one more news story before I go to the physical section. Fizzy's call. And this is in the Evening Standard. They're running a story about Nicolas Pepe, which I can't see very well at the moment, so we might have to you might have to bear with me a little bit. I think I'm managing to find it now amongst all the advertisements. Nicolas Pepe has come a long way at Arsenal as Mikel Arteta backs record signing to find consistency. Headlines getting longer and longer. Matt Davis put that report in. Mikel Arteta believes Arsenal's club record signing Nicolas Pepe can thrive at the Emirates for years to come after the settled forward made significant developments in his game. Obviously, I agree with this much. The 25-year-old has shown flashes of brilliance since making the £72 million move from Lille last summer. But the newspaper adds, he has ultimately struggled to secure a regular role and is yet to start a game in the Premier League this season. Well, it's only two games in, so I wouldn't read too much into that. Anyway, it continues. Pepe was heavily involved, yes, we know, in the FA Cup triumph. And it's not that I'm disregarding it. Yes, of course it's important. Anyway, continuing. The Ivory Coast international did play 90 minutes as Arsenal reached the Carabao fourth round with a 2-0 victory over Leicester in midweek, playing a key role in the build-up to the opening goal. Obviously it was an own goal in the end. A lot of people have remarked, just going off a slight tangent here, about Nketiah being upset over the fact that Pepe scored that goal. I suppose if he was upset, which I'm not sure he was, but if he was upset, it's probably because he wanted the ball crossed to him. Obviously Nketiah managed to get a goal anyway, so it wasn't really an issue in the end. But yeah, he seems to have, he's had that argument, hasn't he, with Dani Ceballos recently. So he's a bit of a spicy character, but I can't moan at the way he took his goal. It was a really clinical finish, a messy but clinical finish against Leicester, so I was quite impressed with that. Anyway, continuing with the Pepe story, and though Pepe has chipped in just 8 goals and 10 assists in 45 games, interestingly, the Standard leave out how many minutes he played on the pitch. And so that's not such a terrible return in his first season in English football. Arteta remains convinced the forward can continue to improve and lock down a role. This is what Arteta said in a press conference. I think he's come a long way, Nico. Obviously, we know what the club paid for him and when he joined. That was obviously an extra pressure. He's a really good character to have around, and I'm positive we'll have him for many years. So he uses positivity, Arteta, he adds. But he's a player who's had to adapt It's a different style. He's got a really good attitude. We can see big developments in a lot of places in his game. He's very settled here. He's liked by the boys. He's a really good character to have around. I'm really positive we're going to have him for many years, and he can perform. And that he can perform at a really high level consistently. So, yeah, I echo that sentiment. I think he will. He will become more and more consistent. And I've only been pleased with what I've seen from Pepe since day one. So I've never been a critic of this particular player. Okay, so with that, handing you over to Physical.
Here we go. It's a bit of a drab game, really.
Yeah.
I won't lie.
Okay. Right. We're recording now, by the way. Just put it on.
Okay.
Yeah, because I thought you were going to launch into it. So tell us about the game then.
Obviously, it was Saturday. So, yeah, I thought if I'm honest, I thought we were poor. I don't think that's particularly controversial. The fact that we had 3 shots on goal in the whole game.
Wow.
And 2 of them were goals. I think speaks volumes about the performance. I think there's a few things that I think didn't work particularly well. Unfortunately, Tierney got injured and Kolasinac got put in, and all that did was expose Kolasinac. It just made us realise, or made me realise, that how much we missed him. He's just on a different level to Kolasinac. And Kolasinac, if he isn't leaving, he should be. And I think, there was rumours that he would be leaving to Schalke, but they were a bit sort of unhappy about the money. Because we got him on a free. So because we got him on a free, obviously his wages are higher than, possibly if we paid a transfer for it.
Yeah,
and I think that's a bit of a stumbling block. But he was exposed, not just defensively. I think defensively he wasn't terrible. I think it's just what he doesn't offer from an attacking viewpoint. And I think it's that final ball. You can say that, because I always used to think with Kolasinac, when he used to play as a wing-back or as a left-back, he would get into decent position, but his final ball wasn't always that great.
Mm.
And that was just, that was evident. So that, I think, didn't go for us. I thought, as well, he brought Ceballos in. And, you would think Ceballos coming in is the right decision. But it just felt like there was a lot of sideways passing. We weren't particularly decisive. We weren't particularly cutting through the lines. You could certainly see that West Ham came with a plan, and they had their zone. They had their lines. They had their 4 and their 5 pretty much. And it was Arsenal couldn't break them down. Arsenal simply couldn't break them down. And I think in terms of possession, I think we edged the possession stats, but. We couldn't cut through them. We couldn't get behind the lines as well as we normally do, because they were quite deep. And I think it was almost one of those games where you think, well, maybe we need to change the formation. Instead of going for 3-4-3, we needed a 10. And I'm not the biggest fan of Ozil, but certainly someone in that of that ilk to maybe cut. Break those lines, sort of thing, get be between the middle and the defence of West Ham, and sort of play those 3 balls, because certainly it wasn't happening. We were poor, and then there's a obviously we scored, I never felt particularly confident after we scored. I never felt particularly confident before we scored. West Ham did have chances, and West Ham could leave that game, and they probably will leave that game thinking we should have got something from this. We really didn't play that well, and I think changing the players had an effect on that.
What about Saka?
Saka came in. I'm not sure who we replaced.
Maitland-Niles.
Yeah.
Maitland-Niles was okay in the previous
Saka
game.
Saka would be a more natural sort of left wing back than Maitland-Niles, but you could argue maybe Saka just played poor. And he's allowed to have poor games. He's a young lad. They're not always going to play well, are they?
Yeah.
But certainly it wasn't a very pretty game to watch. And I kind of was almost resigned to the fact that we were going to get a draw. And then he brought the subs on, he brought Pepe on, and he brought Nketiah on, and you know, rightly so. You know, Willian didn't really do much, I don't think. Lacazette didn't really do much,
except scored. he got the first goal.
Yeah,
didn't he,
well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was one of those games. He had one chance, and he took it.
Yeah,
I can't really remember him having any other chances. Like, certainly, the third shot on goal was Aubameyang right at the end when we were 2-1 up. It wasn't like, and that's how dire it was. It was dire to watch. And for us, I stayed up till 2 a.m. to watch it, and it was hard work. You know, it was hard work to watch. You know, we didn't seem like the same team as we were against Fulham. And to be fair to West Ham, like, you can't really discredit West Ham at all. They had a game plan. You know, Moyes had a game plan, and it worked. You know, Arsenal were not attacking. You know, Arsenal couldn't really hit him on the counter because West Ham were so deep, I thought. And they weren't stupid. They weren't, you know, bombing forward in attacks. They weren't leaving themselves open. And our pressing game, I didn't feel was particularly... I didn't think it was noticeably that good. You know, normally with the pressing game, you see when the other team makes mistakes because of your pressing. At the very least, you see it go back to the keeper and then he lumps it forward and then we turn the ball over that way. Didn't really see it. I didn't feel like the pressing was particularly effective. Well, maybe that's because West Ham, they played around it. They knew how to deal with it, sort of thing. And it works. And I think in theory, the pressing game, you can play around it, but it's putting it into practice, isn't it? Yeah, we've seen Arsenal be pressed.
Yeah.
And, you know, recently, I feel under Arteta, we're able to sort of handle the press and sort of play our way around it. Certainly the Fulham goal, that third goal that Aubameyang scored, we played our way around the press. So it can be done, and I think West Ham, they were confident enough to do it, and it was a surprise performance, I thought, because West Ham as a club are in, you know, free fall, but they played well, and, you know, like I said, they deserved the point. We got results,
yeah,
when we played poorly.
And what about the penalty? I mean, I saw that and I thought, well, with the new rules, it's not a penalty because it hit him on the arm.
United game, so I can't compare that.
Yeah.
For me, if it had been given, I wouldn't have been too shocked. It was one of them, and it was one of them because they changed the rule again. I think it's...
Yeah, if it hits you in the top of your arm...
It wasn't intentional.
Yeah.
Of course it wasn't intentional.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
It's that sort of grey area, because they've got the new rule now is if it comes down below the sleeve length.
Yeah.
And so I think arguably it was up around that area, that sort of end of the sleeve, beginning of the arm sort of area. So I think that might have added to the ambiguity. But I think as well, it's like with any rules, the refs
they
learn them after a while. They kind of, you know, the FA will give these theoretical sort of situations, but it's only when the refs get to experience it in real life that they go, oh, okay, I made a mistake there, next time, and all the other refs learn from them, next time if it happens like that, then we'll do it differently. Because I think United, they conceded a penalty, and I think the situation was really quite similar from what I could hear, from what the commentators were saying on the Arsenal game. It was very, very similar, and I haven't seen the United game, even based on last year's rules, if it had been given, I wouldn't have been shocked. So I think we got away with it there. I do think we got away with one there.
Yeah, it did look a little like that. Although,
you know, they luck a little bit for sure.
Although you have to say, you know, if the rules are the rules though. If they're saying that, you know, if you were wearing a short sleeve shirt and it comes off that area of your short sleeve shirt, which did, then it's not a penalty. But obviously, with the previous rules, I probably would have given it.
For me, I don't think it was that easy to tell.
Yeah.
I think it was even with the camera angles, it wasn't clear cut. It was ambiguous. It was for me, it was ambiguous in the sense that I couldn't couldn't with any real certainty say if it was or wasn't a penalty. It was. If I was the VAR ref, I'd have firmly sat on the fence and gone, whatever the original ref decided, I'll stick with that. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't clear cut, but based on what happened at United earlier, that kind of added a bit more uncertainty to it, or a bit more sort of, oh, it could have been given. Yeah, but also as well, you remember, the commentators like to sort of stir controversy, don't they? They don't want a boring sort of monologue or whatever. So yeah, it's I think we possibly got away with one, but
It looked the other iffy moment was when Leno dropped the ball, and a lot of people been discussing that.
Yeah, now that was for me. That is a talking point. So I thought he was poor.
Yeah,
I thought Leno was poor. He looked shaky. He looked nervous. Like he dropped a couple of balls, and he was punching, and his punching wasn't very good. Oh, and certainly, you know, if you think back to, and I think this is an unfair comparison, but you know, David Seaman.
Yeah.
When you think back to the back four, they had that extra layer of confidence because they knew that they had David Seaman behind. And I don't think that the defenders who were playing on Saturday night would have felt particularly confident with Leno's performance based on that. You know, obviously, though, Arteta's chosen him, and I agree with Arteta. I think he's the right. He should be the number one keeper. And I think he's got room for development, certainly. And I don't think Martinez possibly has that much more room for development, but I do believe Leno has. Mm. But he certainly didn't do himself any favours. He didn't help. He didn't help.
He's had so many good games.
Was Gabriel.
Well, sorry, say that again about Gabriel. Well,
I thought he played well.
Yeah,
well,
that's
he got man of the match,
yeah.
I believe. So obviously just... repeating what everyone else thinks, but he did. You know, I noticed a couple of times he must have made at least two blocks where he just very John Terry-esque just threw himself in front of the ball. And you know, like I remember last year we sort of lauded I think it was Luis and Mustafi because they did that a couple of times in the semi-final or the final.
Oh yeah,
like, oh yeah, brilliant, they're throwing themselves in front of the ball. But I remember the amount of times that Mustafi and or Luis and all the other centre-halves we've had that would turn their back and wouldn't do it. So we were pleasantly surprised that Luis and Mustafi were doing it. But Gabriel, he's been here 2 months and he's already doing it, which makes me feel much, much better because I think it's inbuilt in him. He's just a man mountain. Like, you know, he was winning, he was out-muscling Antonio, the West Ham striker, who, you know, he's a big old lad himself. And yeah, he looks strong. You know, he looks strong. He's passing. Obviously, I think that's a weakness. I think Arteta needs to work on that. But yeah, he looks strong. As a centre half, he's in everything you want for a centre half.
Yeah, I think I haven't really. I mean, reading around the net, most of the comments have been about the Leno incident and how he dropped it. But again, going back to what you said, there were a lot of blocks coming in, and not just from Gabriel. There were quite a few players putting their. the parts you don't want to put on the line.
Yeah.
They were putting them there, and I was thinking, wow, how many blocks? That was at least three, I thought, right after Leno dropped the ball.
I'm just trying to find the stats now.
But it was block after block, and I thought, that's definitely going in, you know, but obviously they kept it out.
Well, I think that's the Arteta effect, to be honest. I really think that's the Arteta effect. You know, he has changed, for me, the attitude of the club. I think, you know, under Wenger and certainly under Emery, but the last few years of Wenger, there was no real discipline in the sense that there's no real passion to play. There was no pressure on people to play well. And you had, you know, people knew, and I think, you know, even people like, say, Ramsey or Walcott or people like that, they knew that their place was almost guaranteed. So there was no sort of pressure on them to perform because they knew, well, I'm going to play next week. So yeah, and I think under Arteta, you know, he's dropped Ozil from it. He's dropped Guendouzi. Every player knows that they have to work hard to justify them starting.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that hasn't been in Arsenal for a fair few years now. And I think it's refreshing to see. And I think what that does with players is players want that. Players don't want a relaxed attitude. Players want to have to be the best they can be because they know they're talented. But, you know, like in all walks of life, if you know you're talented but there's someone that will make you even better and he says, well, you have to work hard to be even better, then you go, okay, fine, you'll do it, you'll put the effort in. And if you don't, then you're out in your ear. And I think under Arteta, he's introduced that, you know, players are fighting for their positions. And you've got people like Ozil and Guendouzi have said, oh, I want to stay. Now, with Ozil, I certainly think a factor in that is the money. But with Guendouzi, I think Guendouzi was genuinely shocked when no one's really come in for Guendouzi.
Yeah.
No one's really sort of made big noise about him. Like, and if you think back, you know, when we signed him, certainly even after his first year with Emery, people were like, oh, he's a good player. He's got a lot of potential. And people have seen this year with his attitude problems and, you know, falling out of Arteta, people have gone, do you know, in this post sort of COVID world that we live in, where money is a bit scarce,
yeah,
people have gone, I'm not willing to take the risk. And I think that shocked Guendouzi. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 2 weeks. I think the transfer window ends October the 6th.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously, Arsenal, we signed that Gunnarsson. Is it Gunnarsson?
Runarsson. Yeah.
I don't know how good he's going to be. I think he's not going to be awful.
He's not played a lot of games, though. Not really. I think I saw he played about 13 games last season. I think it was last season he played 13. But he's not played that many games, even in the French league. He's played for Iceland. But, I mean, and generally, I know it's a bit of a generalisation, but the Scandinavian goalkeepers are generally pretty good. Let's hope that Runarsson doesn't buck the trend.
Well, if you're going to go on Schmeichel, Schmeichel's a good... I don't think Schmeichel's an outlier, certainly.
No.
Hopefully. Well, I think it's one of those, they've seen him, supposedly one of the coaches was like fawning over him and he pushed for the move.
Yeah, that's right.
So one of the coaches,
they've got some knowledge.
Arteta was like, look, we obviously need a backup goalkeeper. And one of the coaches was like, this guy. And he's, I think he's seen something that maybe other people haven't seen. But his performances, I don't think, have been earth-shatteringly good. But I think, for $1 million, it's worth a pop for a year. You know, if he's rubbish, you go, okay, fine. You know, it's only a year. You know, I know it's a four-year deal, but we've only spent $1 million, so we're not really...
Yeah, it's not a fortune,
is
it?
It's quite a low-risk, low-cost sort of venture. And then what that does mean is we can spend the majority of that $20 million that we got from Martinez on a midfielder. And I think it'd be interesting to see what offers we get come in over the next couple of weeks and what we accept as well.
Yeah.
Because obviously, it's common knowledge that Arsenal have too many players. And certainly too many centre-halves. And I think, we need to get rid of a few just to thin the wage bill more than anything else. And, like something like Lacazette, I wouldn't be surprised if Lacazette, because I know he scored... He scored twice, hasn't he, in two games?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But the fact that Arsenal haven't offered him a new contract and he's got 2 years to run down says to me, either they haven't learned from their mistakes and they're going to let it go down to a year and then they're going to get bent over a barrel by him, or they're happy to get rid of him. But if they are happy to get rid of him, then they have to get rid of him now, because obviously his value will dramatically drop in a year's time. So he might go... you have to think some of the centre halves. Socrates, I think, is on his way.
Torreira as well. Not a centre half.
Yeah, Torreira. If Torreira went to Atletico Madrid, that would be fantastic. Just because I think that would give us a bit more sort of leverage with regards to Partey.
Yeah.
It's all like dominoes, isn't it? Like one thing happens and that means that this club can go for them, and it all sort of factors on that. So I think. I think we have to just wait and see, really. But certainly, I would say the area that we need to sort of invest in now, and the only area we really need to invest in currently, I think, is midfield. I think Arteta's willing to take a punt in Nketiah. We've also got Martinelli coming back. We've got Pepe, we've got Willian. So I think we're okay there. Saka is another one. I think midfield is where we need. For me, we need a defensive midfielder with a physical presence.
Yes, definitely. I agree with that.
Possibly a 10. I'm not sure if we're going to get a 10 because we've got Ozil. And I think Arteta will want to try with Ozil one more time. Because he's made it perfectly clear he's not leaving. He's on all that money, a ridiculous amount of money a week. Might as well give him a try. And if he doesn't, you go, do you know, sod it, I'll put you in the reserves then. Because what I don't understand about the Ozil situation is that Ozil as a player, he must be thinking, okay, yeah, I get this. It's a career. You know, you start at 60, you finish at 35, you have a shelf life, and you only get so many years playing, and you have to look after yourself financially. I get that. I 100% get that. But it's not just about the money. You know, I think almost similar to us, you know, he's gone into that profession because he loves it. You know, he has a real passion for it, and it's, you know, he worked hard ever since he was a kid. And I've read his book, you know, and he, like most professional footballers, he worked hard. You know, he put the effort in, and he was lucky that he was born with a certain amount of talent, but he put the effort in, certainly.
So and where so did it go wrong?
And he wants to be successful, he wants to win trophies. If he doesn't play for Arsenal this year, there's no chance he's going to make the German Euro squad next year. And...
But I don't think he really cares about.
I mean, behind the scenes.
After he retired from international football, I mean, I don't expect him to want to make a comeback. But it seems to me like he's opted to take the easy life if that's what not playing is.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be to me, and it wouldn't be to you, and it wouldn't be to many many fans. I'm sure we'd play as long as we could play, and then if we couldn't play, we'd feel upset. Yeah. But he doesn't show any sign of being upset. Maybe he is, but. It's very hard to tell with him because you wouldn't want to play poker against him, would you? Because you can't tell what emotions he's feeling.
No, but
you
sure.
tend to feel no, he's not sure. feeling any, but clearly he is. But I just don't know what those emotions are. And when he's on the pitch also, he just doesn't seem to care. That's why he doesn't chase back. And I was wound up about him many years ago, you know, even though he was producing in an attacking sense, I didn't like his lack of defensive work, even though I was so pleased when he joined Arsenal. I was really pleased about it. But after the initial...
I remember when he joined and then Sanchez joined the year after.
Yeah.
It kind of actually felt, we're getting back to where we should be going now.
It did
and
feel
And then Sanchez,
good.
To be fair to him, he did deliver.
Yeah,
I thought Sanchez was great for the first 2 years. Was it the first 2 years?
I'm not even sure.
He left
you know,
after 2.5, didn't he? Or maybe 3.5. Anyway, so he had that half a season when he wanted to go. Arsenal didn't let him go, and he threw a paddy. And that last half a season, he was a bit shit, wasn't he? But certainly for the rest of the time he was there, he was brilliant. And Ozil, Ozil was a bit different. Ozil flitted in and out of games. He wasn't consistent. And he said he didn't chase back. But I think Ozil and Sanchez were both parts of a bigger problem under Arsenal. But the players had lost that sort of burning desire to win. Because the players, they weren't motivated. I didn't think Wenger sort of particularly man-managed them very well. If you compare to, say, what Arteta's doing now,
the
majority of the players, you know, he's making them better than they are. You know, even I think Gary Neville said it yesterday, Arteta's punching above his weight.
Yeah, I remember that quotation, yeah.
And I agree, he is. And it reminds me of Ferguson. If you think back to when Ferguson, that last year when he won the league with Van Persie, when Van Persie joined, that team was dog shit. They were terrible. But they won the league at a canter. And then the next year when Moyes took over, you got to see that team for the level that they were.
For what they really were,
And it was the Ferguson effect. And Ferguson was brilliant at this. He man-managed players, and he made every game, he made your Fletchers or your Park was a skillful player, but he got the absolute best out of those players. And I think Wenger in his last few years definitely didn't do that.
He
couldn't do it on a consistent basis anyway. And I think Arteta, I do think Arteta is sort of changing that now. I think Arteta's overachieving with the players that he's got. So it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, obviously Liverpool next.
So how do you see that pan
out? I'm tempted to stay up for it again because it's a Monday night, but I'm teaching online, so I could probably get away with it. I don't know. I think if Liverpool Chelsea, did you watch much of the Liverpool Chelsea game?
No, I didn't. Didn't see.
I think Liverpool deservedly won. Lampard said that the game changed on the sending off, and he's right. The game, it was a bit closer before the sending off. It was a red card, in my opinion anyway, it was a red card. But Liverpool for me, they're just awesome, you know. And I don't know if Arsenal can fluke another victory, really. They have to play out their best. It's at Anfield, so the pressure's off Arsenal to a certain extent. The pressure's off Arsenal. I think it'll be a good game, but yeah, we'll see. You know, we've got a very difficult start to the season. We play Liverpool, City, United away in the first 7 games.
Yeah.
So if we're, you know, haven't lost all 3 of them games, then I think that's something to be positive about, really.
And like I said before, I think I'd rather take those games early on in the season when there are no fans.
Yeah,
especially those hostile-ish grounds.
I think that is a massive factor. Mm. I think for Arsenal especially, that's a huge factor, not having the fans intimidate. Because I think Arsenal, you know, they do look a bit more solid, but, you know, they probably still can be intimidated, certain players anyway. So, yeah, no, you know, to get the result against West Ham that we did, you know, the 3 points is all that matters. And it's one of those, I've read in one blog, and it's one of those where he goes, it shows us as like championship winning credentials where we can play ugly, play bad and still get a result. Or it exposes massive flaws that need to be addressed urgently, and if they're not, then our season will fall apart. Which is quite a sort of like opposing sort of a standpoint on it. But yeah, Liverpool I think will be a better indicator.
Yeah, definitely. That's the litmus test, as you people say in that department. Don't you use litmus paper anymore? Remember litmus paper? Has that gone? Has that died?
Yeah, we do. We don't set fire to it. Well, certainly I've only used it to determine whether something's acid or alkali. that's about it. Yeah, we don't tend to set fire to it. Maybe they do it like higher level chemistry. Yeah. The chemistry I'm allowed to teach, we don't, certainly.
All right. Okay, well, thanks for that, Alex.
No worries.
We'll knock it on the head there then.